Osiris.
Hi, listeners. I want to tell you about a cause that I'm involved with at Heritage Radio Network. HRN is celebrating its 15th year, and to celebrate, we're deepening our commitment to giving voice to the next generation of food system storytellers, and we need your help. Our internship and fellowship programs help activate new possibilities for underrepresented and underestimated young people through experiential journalism, audio engineering, and production training. Through these unique programs, HRN helps food equity stewards build essential workforce readiness skills that expand their potential and foster economic mobility. Please consider supporting these critical programs. And with a minimum donation, you can be entered to win a dinner for two at an amazing restaurant in one of 8 cities and tickets to a concert at a great venue in one of those cities. We have incredible partners across the country who have donated, as they also share our passion for helping to educate the next generation of food system storytellers. Check out heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. And make sure you donate before March 31st. Thank you.
You're tuned in to The Show on the Road, a music discovery podcast where I interview songwriters, band leaders, and artists from around the world. My name is Zach Lupitin. Welcome to the first episodes of 2020. Buckle up, there's going to be a lot of crazy music coming your way. And this month, The Show on the Road is sponsored by Winter Wondergrass, now with 3 unique festival locations. In Steamboat, Colorado, February 21st through 23rd, Lake Tahoe's beautiful Squaw Valley, California, March 27th through 29th, and now Stratton Resort, Vermont, for the second annual Sugar and Strings Fest, April 10th and 11th. Who throws a music festival under the stars in the middle of winter, you ask? Why, Winter Wondergrass, of course. These are the most unique festivals I've ever been a part of. I played them in Lake Tahoe and in Colorado, and you know what? Just because you're wearing snow pants doesn't mean you can't dance, and it is really, really fun, guys. This year's fests in Colorado and California will include 20-plus bands over the course of 3 days, including headlining sets by Green Sky Bluegrass, Billy Strings, and Margo Price in Steamboat, and in Lake Tahoe with Devil Makes 3, the infamous String Dusters, and many more. Each event will also feature a set by the Winter Wonder Women, some of which have been on this very show. Single and multi-day passes for Winter Wondergrass are available now. Head over to winterwondergrass.com for more. This week on the show, we welcome a Virginia-based band of virtuous velvet-voiced harmony masters and savvy string band experimenters who've quietly put together an impressive body of work over the last decade, corkscrewing their way across the country, supporting 7 diverse acoustic-based albums, gaining fans from their big-hearted, peace-promoting songs, and headlining folk festivals across the world. They even found time to start their own massively successful hometown hoedown called the Red Wing Roots Fest, which has become a new destination for roots bands and daring new artists. Artists sharing their craft under the stars each year. Ladies and gents, the Steel Wheels. I will admit to you, I begin this new year not in the highest of spirits. After a decade of playing music, I find myself where many songwriters and touring bands often do, in a state of limbo, hoping for something bigger to happen so I don't always have to worry about paying rent on time while also daring to make new music that is really saying something and doesn't fit in anywhere, at least not yet. My band Dust Bowl Revival will be releasing our new record, Is It You, Is It Me, on 30 Tigers, January 31st. Yes, that is very, very soon. And what can I say? I am desperately, terribly proud of this collection of 13 songs. We try to reach into a divide that I know is growing in this country and hope maybe that someone, anyone, will reach back. In many ways, my guests this week, the Steel Wheels, begin and end their bold and beautiful last record, Over the Trees, which was produced by Sam Kassirer, who also produced our record, in a way that I maybe didn't have courage to do yet. They acknowledge that we are not where we need to be, not just as people, but as countries, as governments, as entities in the human race. We fall into ancient, dark habits. We lash out against each other and our green planet. And while we begin that record, Over the Trees, with that questioning, they end with a beautiful message that I think we need more than ever this year. What if we actually really tried for peace this year? Not just in ourselves, but in every part of life. I was lucky to catch these guys in the upstairs green room at McCabe's Guitar Shop down the street from me here in West LA. And if you've never seen a show there, do yourself a favor, get a ticket, buy an oatmeal raisin cookie at the repair shop window, and support a local folk band like the Steel Wheels that is spreading the good word. These are good people doing good work on many levels. I'm super glad I could have them on to help us kick off the 2020 season, so here they are now, the steel wheels.
Cut through the parking lot. Helps a little to say his name, but I can't say it helps a lot. It wasn't my fault, they all said. I still kinda take the blame. If I can just put my head down, will it all be the same? I go back to work in the morning, just need to get some rest. I wake up and I hear the car horn, and the tight feelings in my chest. I know that I should talk to someone, maybe it would do some good. Don't know what I'd say.
Tell us who you are and where we are right now.
We are the Steel Wheels. We are at McCabe's Guitar Shop in Santa Monica.
Historic McCabe's.
Yeah.
Historic.
The McCabe's Guitar Shop.
So came, happy to be here.
I came 4 blocks. It was a long commute to get here.
Yeah, thanks
but you
for
guys
all the effort, man.
Came 3,000 miles.
We did.
That's right.
And about 6 hours drive today in California.
Yeah, that's right.
You like those California drives?
Oh my gosh.
I-5 is that hidden jewel of California.
Nobody yeah, talks I about. Go foraging for lunch today.
Yeah.
Bravo Farms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
We did.
It's the only healthy-ish spot.
Wow. You nailed that.
Or yeah. In-N-Out, but that's not.
That's the thing. Yeah. Right.
What is the longest drive that you can remember that you did in one sitting to get to a show?
Yeah. Ooh, to get to our longest drives have historically been the end of tours.
Yeah, I know the go-home drives, but like, it's
get
those
to a show
special
and play.
8-hour, like, oh, and we barely yeah. made
We've
it.
We've done 15.
Woo.
And played a show.
Yeah. What?
What's that one?
Muscatine, Iowa.
Oh.
River's Edge Gallery, Virginia to Muscatine.
Muscatine, where pearl snaps are made.
Yes they have a pearl snap factory.
Yeah.
Who agreed to do that?
Uh-huh.
I hope you were getting paid well, but who agreed?
I mean, that would fall on me. I grew up in Iowa, though, so I was like, okay, if I can do this drive solo, we can do it all together.
Yeah.
We high-fived and hit the road.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we've often toured. We almost always try to keep our tours to a sane number of dates in a row. But that means if you're going to tour west from where we're at in Virginia, sometimes you're starting that tour pretty far west, you know? If you're going to get 10 days and that's all you're going to do,
yeah.
And you got to start with some pretty big drives.
You guys have been together for a decade or so, right?
Yeah.
Or more now? Is it 2011?
We released our first record as the Steel Wheels in 2010.
Okay.
So, yeah.
But we were playing before then.
Yeah, it's a that's why we're sort of hedgy about that answer is yeah. that
there was 5 years before that.
Well, I read this thing that like you recorded there was like an untitled band project that went on.
Well, it used to be called Trent Wagler and the Steel Wheels.
Yeah, it used to be Zach Lupitan and Dust Bowl.
Hey,
you guys and your egos.
You get it.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, that'll fit on a market.
Yes. And everybody remembers Trent Wagler so well. I've made such a name for myself.
Wagler
yeah.
wheel. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Oh, man.
Steel Wagglers.
Right.
Yeah.
We got a lot of, mispronunciations.
Where did your name come from?
The Steel Wheels?
Yeah.
That's also Brian.
That's true. I'm in charge of all things like that.
We had a gig before we had a name. And we were coming up against the, you know, like, we've got a gig on Thursday. What are we calling ourselves? It can't just be Trent Wagler and Brian Dickel and, you know. And so we were like, what do we do? So we...
Yeah, just brainstorming over the phone.
Yeah, got that name. The Steel Wheels was the least, I don't know, offensive to any of our ears. And
it wasn't supposed to be a career either.
Yeah.
A gig on Thursday.
Right.
That's all.
Right.
What day jobs were you working at that time?
I was building high-end acoustic guitars.
Oh.
At Huss and Dalton Guitars, actually, at that time.
Mm-hmm. Where is that in Virginia?
Stanton, just south of Harrisonburg, which we call home.
Yeah.
Which I now live in Stanton, so.
Oh.
Yeah.
I was working in more of a social work field. I was doing education and prevention work around issues of sexual violence and domestic violence.
Yeah.
Important stuff.
Yeah.
And that's Trent speaking. I'm Jay, and I was playing music and teaching lessons and things like that, working at a guitar shop.
I mean, also important.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
Absolutely.
What do I do?
Restringing that Yamaha, man. Changing one.
Hey, I got really good at
exactly.
like the Floyd Rose Bridges.
Yeah.
I mean, do you guys ever feel like you have to justify your choice of career. Like, look, you were working in something that was genuinely helping someone on a ground level situation, right? Now, obviously, music is so much a part of everyone's life, but also, like, it uplifts people, it makes them feel, it makes them get out of their comfort zone. But it's like my grandma always jokes, like, is this something that is needed, really? Like,
yeah.
But it's like, yeah, my grandma, you are listening to music right now. Someone has to make that music.
Right.
Well, it's kind of two camps, you know. There's some people that come up to you after a show, and they're like, so you make up your own stuff? And what else do you do? You
yeah.
Yeah.
And then there's people who are like, thank you for what you're doing. It just feeds my soul. And, oh, my God. You know?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I do think it's a question that I ask myself all the time. The choice to do music, is it changing the world and the other, if I made choices to do other things that maybe I could? I don't know the answer to that. At the same time, you know, what I used to do was like going into high schools and doing these huge assemblies talking about, you know, gender issues, talking about sexuality, talking about healthy relationships. And I would get to the end of a week of that and just be like, I don't know if this is helpful or not. Like, some dude coming to someone's high school for one time, is that useful? Versus, like, you know, spending our time really honing into something we not only love but are passionate about, trying to write songs that have meaning to us and get those songs heard. I do think there's an element of that that is, that again, like, people are amazing out there doing things that are truly, truly, completely, like, we need this to happen or else. And I wouldn't equate maybe our touring with some of that.
Yeah.
You know, people be doing brain surgery or amazing cancer research. Maybe I wouldn't equate our Americana band touring the country.
Yeah. It's easy to get jaded, you know, of like, what are we doing? We're just sitting in a van most of the time. And but every now and then you get like an email or somebody afterwards, you know, it's like, you touched our lives in this way. And it's like, kind of gives you a sense of like, okay, maybe we are doing something worthwhile.
Is there a message you got recently that was particularly touching?
Well, we just played out in Bend, Oregon, and this couple came up to us at the show and handed us a card. They had a farm, and they were just, they handed me a card, and they just said, hey, look, your music means so much to us. And the card, I read the card later, and it was just, full of all those kind words, and then they just, you know, expressed if we ever needed a place to stay to please come to their farm. They'll load us up with veggies and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know,
It is amazing the kindness of total strangers who will come to shows and give of themselves, you know?
Yes.
Because I feel like the jadedness, I think, around music sometimes for me is that it's hard, I think, when you're a full-time touring musician to fully appreciate just going to a show and how like important that is to people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like almost this old-fashioned gift that you're like, oh, people still do that.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Right.
Not everywhere.
Sometimes not.
Has there been a very empty show recently where you questioned all your life decisions?
Was that like Thursday?
Too recent. That's too recent. That
hurts.
Yeah, I mean,
should we name the name?
What did you feel when you went up there on Thursday?
Yeah.
No, because I think that's like the thing that we don't talk about as bands.
Yeah. Yeah.
Social media doesn't show it.
Totally.
And it's, you can't really do that as a, I don't know, a PR thing, because you're like, oh, well, we're failing.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right.
Exactly. And then the next day you'll sell out wherever.
Totally. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But
well, you know, I mean, the way I look at it now is that, I mean, to the people that are that did come to the show, you know, they paid for the show.
Yeah.
And that's our job to be there and to play,
yeah.
whether it's to a full house or to, you know, whatever, 30 people. And, you know, sometimes it can be a little disheartening, but at the same time, you know, we're out there doing it, and it's still a positive thing.
Well, and I do think, I mean, sometimes those are the nights where you play for 30 people, and if you put on that great show and you play it like you did when you played to 500 or whatever, sometimes those are the fans that really will stick with you for the rest. You know, I do feel like sometimes the people who have continued to come back every time we're in their town are the people who first saw us at a, you know, farmer's market in a little town in Virginia when we were just playing and hoping for tips. So I also see it as an opportunity to connect on a very one-to-one level, because sometimes it is one-to-one.
But you've had some some rock star moments, right? You were at Stagecoach, you know?
Sure, yeah.
You know? Was that weird, or did that feel like?
Oh yeah,
you
that was really that was weird. One of the
weirder
weird.
Ones for
that's
sure.
Pretty like mainstream country festival.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Boy, that was really strange.
That was our first trip to California ever.
Yeah.
It was, yeah.
That does not represent us.
Yeah.
We found out since.
Yeah. No, I think that every part of that was strange, from it being the first time we've ever been to California to, you know, like some of the other performers that are there just feeling like, are we really on the same bill? Are we really playing to the same crowds? Because normally it doesn't feel like that's our crowd. Yeah. A higher percentage of the audience were in bikinis and or shirtless and cowboy hats than usual.
We felt overdressed.
The hang was great though. They treated us very well.
Oh man, and yeah.
It was cool in that way. Yeah.
Did they respond to your music or were they kind of bored?
well,
were they waiting for like the you know Garth Brookses of the world?
I mean, I think that it's hard to say.
I think we felt like we had a good response from the crowd that was in the you know we were like in the.
Americana.
One of the tented Americana stages.
Yeah.
And we were a couple sets before, was it just after us was Old Crow that time? Or was it?
Yeah, we were right before Old Crow.
And so, you know, there were definitely people looking for Old Crow, but our music and Old Crow's music definitely sort of are, they've got a, they fit. And so a lot of that crowd
I remember watching Norah Jones in the next tent over with like 300 people while there was like 8,000 people waiting for Toby Keith to come on. I'm like, this is kind of great. But
Norah Jones was at Stagecoach?
She was. She was playing in the Americana tent.
Oh, it was the what was
Little
Willie's. Little
Willie's.
Yeah. That's what it was, yeah.
And it was just kind of like, I can't believe there's nobody really here. And they're all just waiting.
Yeah, it was some of your early records like Lay Down, Lay Low and No More Rain had that kind of Old Crow, honky, bluegrass vibe, whereas these last few records, especially the new one, Over the Trees, it's pushing some boundaries. I mean, you're going into some, you know, almost psychedelic rock and roll, never losing the threads of the string band music that, you know, sort of make you guys special.
Well,
you know,
thanks.
And the harmonies.
Thank you.
And, you know, the record you did, Whilst We Came Here, was produced by Sam Kassirer, who just did our Dust Bowl Revival record that's coming out.
Yeah.
What is it like working with someone like Sam, you know, to help shape songs?
Sam has been a real facilitator for us to make some of the transitions we've made sonically. And I think, you know from working with him, he's just such a great collaborator. We had never worked with any producer before Sam, and so everything else had been self-produced. You know, we're in the studio really just banging our heads against the wall to some extent, and over several projects, finally, we wondered, and I don't know whether it was true or not, but we wondered if we had kind
of
come to, our ceiling when it comes to just our heads in a studio. And so, but we were very careful for whatever sort of control freak side of things to who are we going to bring in? And if we're going to, you know, if we're going to really put someone in the captain's chair, like, do we trust them and what are they like? And Sam is just such a master of really kind of becoming another band member and yet also having very good and strong ideas and being willing to push you, but also being willing to listen. And over the course of two records with him, I think we've been able to, he helped facilitate us really becoming a more full version of who we already were. Like, I think the musical influences that we were able to bring in were ones that we've always sort of hinted at, but we didn't allow our palette maybe to get as broad as it did. And so Sam, in general, to answer your question, and working on songs, I think the way he helped us push things was to just, no idea is too weird to explore. No idea is, in fact, if it is weird, let's go towards that. And then we can always pull it back. And I think having that level of exploration, knowing that we're pushing some of us in the band at different times, like in a direction that we're just like, no, I never wanted to hear that on this instrument. I never wanted to hear that kind of a tone or whatever. And yet he's like, let's just see it through. Let's put a delay on the fiddle and let's do these weird effects to a banjo and just see what happens. And I think it was really helpful for us and continues to be.
Yeah, because, you know, you open with this line that I feel like is very fitting for what we started talking about in the beginning. that no one ever told me would be like this. It just it just hits you right off the top.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and that's sort of very symbolic, I think, of just like being an adult in our country right now, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I thought we would be in a different place. Like, I would be in a different place.
Right.
Like, we're all going through, like, an existential questioning at the same time.
Yeah.
Or something.
Yeah. No, I think that's exactly right. And that was part of, I think, Sam also, over the course of these records, has been there to help us. He's not just interested in which songs sound the best or which song by itself is a good song, but instead thinking, what kind of statement are we making with this music, with this record, with this song? And
what does that line mean to each one of you?
That's a good question.
I mean, the world around me not living up to the expectations I had. And I think it's that element of now being at the place where I'm looking around and saying, well, am I the adult in the room? Like, am I the one who's supposed to have this figured out? Because if that's the case, that's maybe even more scary. And so, it does get back to some of those initial questions we were talking about like, am I doing all that I could be doing? The song goes on to sort of open up into a bit of a conversation about, it has a little rain and kind of weather or climate change touch to some of the lyrical content that is also a little a wink or maybe a nudge at the people who are like, whoa, I had no idea that these crazy fires would be happening in California. No one ever said that, when in reality, we've been hearing a lot of people saying this for a while. And so there's also a sense of, no one ever told me it would be like this, is actually, have I been listening? Because people have been telling me a lot.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. That's pretty good.
Yeah. I think when I hear that first, it kind of it's an internal thing of whenever I've been in doubt or questioned something, questioned myself, I think. No one ever told me it'd be like this. You know, whether I'm having a fight with my wife or something like that, where I'm thinking, what's going on here? And am I right? Or is she right? Or does anybody need to be right? And then, it's to start off the record like that, you know, it is a really, it's a strong phrase.
Mm. Yeah. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, that can be interpreted a couple different ways for me at times. Like, some of it can be like, this mess is just dumped on you and no one ever told you to be like this. At the same time, it could also be occasionally, depending on where you take the song in your mind, a positive thing of like, no one ever told me it would be like this. It doesn't necessarily be a bad thing.
Sure. Mm.
You know,
absolutely.
It's like, it could be like this. You know, no one ever actually told me it would be this good.
No one ever told me it would be like this.
What did you think you were going to be when you were a kid? When you were this age?
Boy, I mean, I gave up my NBA dreams at some point. That was first and foremost, and then I just was 4'2" and 75 pounds, and it's tough.
Even like a Steve Nash.
Yeah. I was quick. I was quick and crafty, but it ended there. But yeah, that was kind of, I was always, you know, sports. And definitely even, I mean, I didn't start becoming a full-time musician until I was in my mid-30s.
Mm-hmm.
I was, you know, I was pretty set in building guitars. I was having a great time, and I loved that job. And this just kind of, like, took us over a little bit of, like, I don't know that I'd be a professional musician with anybody else other than this group of guys that we've always been together. Of like, this felt kind of right. Maybe let's try this.
I think that is one unique thing about this band is that, to a large extent, we all took this leap together. There was not... And I, with the one caveat of Kevin, who's not in the room right now, who's our drummer, who's been touring with lots of bands over many years, And Jay also had a touring project before this that was a little more articulated. But we all really jumped off the ledge of saying, this is full time, we're quitting our other jobs, all at the same time. And
was that like 2011?
It would have been like end of 2009, maybe, 2010.
Yeah, that's when the talks really started. Yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, maybe we were just so stupid that we thought we could do it, but I think we did each little step of even getting to a recording studio and putting things together or putting the materials in the hands of any sort of promoter for radio or for press, all of that, we kind of did so slowly and almost begrudgingly, like, well, I don't know, would anybody want to hear this? And so in that sense, it's been a long, slow growth kind of career, but it's also each little step along the way has been like, oh, what a great surprise, because we didn't expect this at all.
Yeah.
What a magical time, though. It was a hell of a lot of fun. We've always had just a lot of fun playing together. And
that's key for those nights when 30 people come out.
Yeah, totally. Like, exactly right.
I think if I was a solo singer-songwriter, I would be just so hard to keep motivated when a night like that happens. But unless we can kind of like... Well, at least we have each other and we can make fun of ourselves about it, you know?
And there's always a worse night that you can remember.
Yeah.
Like, at least, I mean, I hope. Who knows? But at this point, I feel like we can always say, yeah, but remember that other show that was, like, so bad?
Well, it's funny now.
Has it ever happened to you that there's been a better night that was slim than a night that was packed? Like,
well, because a full house that's not fully with you is actually a very lonely, hollow feeling.
It is, right? In its own way, yeah.
It's fight.
Whereas, like, 30 people who are so pumped to be there in someone's garage feels great. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah, absolutely.
I always remember watching a video of Jeff Tweedy combating with, like, a crowd that's talking.
Yeah.
And he finally just says, like, look, I don't know exactly what you guys came and paid all your money to come and hear, but if you'd let me know and I could do that for you, I would love to, but in the meantime, if you could just shut the fuck up, like, and I loved that, but it also was like, man, this is Jeff Tweedy, like, if he also has to deal with it, that makes me feel okay.
Is there an amazing music venue that is not known to most people that you would love to tell people about?
Yeah, there's a number of those golden gems out there.
We talk about Stoughton Opera House quite often.
I love that place.
Everybody that plays it loves it. Everybody that goes there loves it, but it's not on people's map or radar, I don't think.
Every time where should we go in the Midwest? I was like, how about the Stoughton Opera House?
Yeah.
And they I think they don't book like a whole lot of shows. They book kind of a season in that
city. Yeah. Yep. But it's great.
It's like outside Madison.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Little town, beautifully renovated opera house. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a great one. We've played a bunch of small towns in the Midwest over the years that have actually been really amazing. We often talk about this little town in eastern Colorado called Ray, Colorado. W-R-A-Y.
Oh, okay.
And, I mean, it's a town of...
5,000, maybe?
Maybe. And there is not much around, but there is a restaurateur there who, you know, came up through Denver, really loves music, started a restaurant there, is trying to build something, and realized that he's in between a lot of things and can get some artists to stop in on off nights. And we've built a thing there where it's just like, it feels like a...
What's it called, the place?
It's called Fourth and Main.
Okay.
And it's this restaurant upstairs, and then they have these nights of music. And it's become just this really great small town vibe where you can tell they're just so appreciative that you've come to to their little town. And
we've made friends there. Yeah. It feels a second home. We usually do like two nights there.
Yeah, I go to my chiropractor's there.
It's great.
So don't mess your back up until you get back.
No, exactly. Yeah, I know. Yeah, wait for all my work.
Have there been any on-stage injuries that have occurred in your 10 years?
Well,
to instruments.
To instruments, for sure. Yeah. No, like, real big...
Can't think of any terrible...
There's, I mean, it wasn't on stage, but it was right before going on stage where you were dancing around and
you were doing a Mick Jagger impression.
I was doing my Mick Jagger impression. It was in Canada, and I like
you were like, he's so old, he can still dance around.
He can do this, and I like, and I threw my back out in the worst way, and I was like, yeah, he's so old, and I can't even do it for like 4 or 5 seconds.
He has those like videos on Instagram where he's like warming up for like 45 minutes.
That was Trent's downfall.
He's like doing like ballet moves. Like he has like you know, he's got like the bar and he's his legs going up.
Oh, yeah. See, yeah, no, yeah. I did not do any of that. We got off a plane in Canada, and we were like cold in the green room, and I suddenly threw my back out, but. We haven't had any.
You guys
legs.
Did, a couple of you did a bicycle tour, right, through Virginia and Michigan?
Yeah, all of us here did those tours. Two in Michigan and
one in North Carolina. Yeah.
One in Virginia.
It's been a while, but it's fun. Yeah. It's a fun way to see the country and a fun way to slow down, and people come up and talk to you, and you're a spectacle. You know, you stop for a sandwich, and everybody's like, what are you? Like, what are you doing?
Forrest Gump.
Yeah. It's hard as hell, too. I mean, you're carrying all your own stuff.
Yeah, so we did it.
Trailers.
Yeah, trailers long bikes.
We did it before drums, so we haven't quite... We've never done a self-supported tour with everything we're touring with now.
Was it a full upright bass or a full Chadwick?
I used my folding Chadwick, but it's not any lighter, unfortunately. It's just shorter.
Yeah.
Yeah. The thing that would make it most difficult now would just be proximity from town to town. You know, can't really play 60 miles apart for 10 days.
Yeah, it's trickier. I mean, not that our profile is large, but the larger your profile gets, the more further you got to go between shows.
Our booking agent hated it so much. Like, it's like, what?
You're making shows up somewhere.
60 miles away? Okay. But... No, it was fun. I mean, it started from the idea of how can you tour more green. I remember being at a Folk Alliance conference, and they were doing some workshop on, you know, eco-touring. And Jay and I were kind of joking around about, you know, well, maybe if we just toured without a car at all, we wouldn't have to, you know, burn no gas. And so it started from a joke, and then it kind of, we saw it as a challenge. And it was, it is a fun way to sort of reset and... You get a lot of time to think out there on the bike, so yeah.
Who does the majority of the songwriting?
I do.
How does a song start, and then how does it expand in the Steel Wheels?
There's a couple different models. While I do probably most of the songwriting, and I'm creating, you know, melody and lyrics, and then I bring it. I'll make demos usually of my own stuff and bring it to the band, and then we sort of build it from there. There's also been. I don't know, how many songs have we written together now? Maybe 6, 7?
Something like that.
That we've recorded. Yeah. And so both with Jay and with Eric, there have been situations where they will send me a melody on an instrumental of some kind, and so it starts from there. And that's been a fun challenge to write to lyrically, especially there's been several times where Jay has sent me a melody with a title already. And something about the title often... I mean, that's probably happened.
And I love that.
I know.
Like, almost your hand.
Which song is there? A song on the last record?
On the last record, "Waiting in the Dark." Mm-hmm. He wrote the basic. I mean, really wrote the music to it. Sent me a complete instrumental version and called it "Waiting in the Dark." And I got inspired by that and wrote the song to it.
Were you watching horror films while you were writing that?
No, not at all. It just sort of triggered something. In fact, in that case, it triggered something for me. To write a song about that was about, you know, it's like really has ties to my family and my family history. It wasn't something I ever consciously thought I would write a song about, but something about that title just triggered that. So that's a fun part of the process that's happened a couple times.
I was going to ask you about that song because there is a thing that maybe a refrain that comes out at the end, and maybe I just heard it at the end, of, is it a marimba?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. And then you have... The mandolin picking kind of underneath it, and there is a spookiness to this song. Yeah, you know, you're talking about, you know, shovels and, you know, you're hiding out in the dark and, you're losing your mind. It almost was like, wait, is that the Halloween theme underneath?
There's this kind of
very persistent... ominous push.
It's a dark trance almost. Yeah. And it's been fun to recreate that live as well. At the end of that song, because we don't have a marimba. with us on the road.
Boo.
Yeah. Boo.
Oh, my
gosh.
I mean, here at McCabe's, there's probably one laying around.
That is true. That's true.
We could always get out the electric sitar.
Yeah. Which is here.
Yeah, that is on the wall.
Is there a sitar in that song?
There's not. No. But
there is tonight.
And I'm waiting in the dark again. Oh, I'm waiting in the dark again. Yes, I'm waiting in the dark again. Am I losing my mind? Am I losing my mind?
What haunts your dreams right now? That you would write a song or a movie or a play or something about?
Whoa. I don't know if it haunts my dreams, but I think the first thing that came to my mind when you said what would you write about? I think about like the things that deeply do concern me. And I probably can get pretty scared about, do have to do with probably the gun situation in our country. And so something about that being the mass shootings, just the gun policies in our country and how much it seems like it's just compounding on itself in the midst of the other hysteria, that would be something that
scares me. Not only
that,
that somehow people refuse to acknowledge that we're the only major country that still...
Right.
Refuses to get better in this way.
Yeah.
That we are okay with having our kids dying.
Right.
We offer a lot of prayers on Facebook, though. So it's all okay then.
Yeah.
What about you?
Yeah, I mean, kind of down those same lines, a bit of, just a societal division / kind of the scary part for me is, seeing all this division, all the people that are, I don't necessarily agree with their political policies or their moral policies, and yet we're polar opposites and they don't see anything wrong with that and I see all these things wrong with that. I don't know. It's kind of a weird spot to be in right now.
Right. But how do you handle these times, to put it sort of generally, on stage as a performer, with a platform of some kind? You've got a microphone.
Yeah.
How do you handle it? Knowing that you're going across the country, you don't know who all is in your crowd necessarily.
I'm getting less okay not saying anything. Mm. Our new record that's coming out in January is pretty clear-eyed, maybe for the first time, about some major topics, especially gun control.
Mm-hmm.
There's a song that will be possibly offensive to a lot of people. Talks about AR-15s, and I'm actually talking right now to the March for Our Lives people because it's based on the Parkland shooting. And I somehow ran into in the food hall in Madrid the publicist for March for Our Lives.
Whoa!
So they might actually hear this song. They might actually, those kids actually might, and it wasn't paying homage to them that I was so heartened and impressed that they actually were standing up to the system.
Yeah.
And you guys have families, some of you guys, right?
Yeah, my daughter and I went to the March for Our Lives. Mm. Yeah, she was really impacted by that whole moment.
Yeah.
She's 15 now, and she was...
What did you have her when you were 12?
Yes, yes.
You guys started early.
We like to get our work done and then have fun.
Yeah.
He's handsome and he looks good.
Yeah. I'm really fascinated by this time with the divisiveness that everybody's talked about and we all hear about, what our role is when we get up there on stage and we have people coming out to our show and you find yourself, like you said, you do have a microphone and there's a responsibility there. We're at a certain time, and what will we say years from now when our kids say, what did you think? What were you doing when Trump was president? Or whatever it is. And so there's really this motivation there, but then there's also the other side of you say something and you see some people getting their feathers ruffled and they're like, just sing or whatever. You get that vibe in certain crowds, and you also are like, well, is this the moment? Is this the right time? Are we somehow, I don't know. It continues to be something I wrestle with, because we do have a mixed crowd. I think we tend, you know, our crowd skews left, but you know.
But you're from the South.
We're from the South. We play, you know, old time music, at least enriched music. That's inspired by some of that mountain music. And so you don't know who all's showing up. And sometimes you're surprised, too, when you're like, yeah, we seem like we might. And then they start, you know, talking. I don't know. It's something that I definitely wrestle with because, as also, like, as the front man talking, sometimes I also feel like I've got a responsibility. I'm representing these other guys. If I all of a sudden go on a rant, you know, is that what everybody... We all tend to agree on rants,
yeah.
But is that what we all want to use this platform for in this moment? And that's the question.
Yeah,
that
even
I sometimes...
like the more tangible side of that is like we're not at a level where we can lose fans.
Yeah,
like, we're still all trying to make it. You know, it's like, but do you just silently stay by for the business side of it and
I think
it doesn't exist?
Yeah, I mean. You know, when you're saying shit on the mic, there's still tact you can have to, like, I mean, we're still trying to play music and to have the music speak for itself in some regard, you know.
And if you make somebody walk out of the room, you don't have a dialogue with them at all.
Yeah.
You know, so there's that side of it, too. So it's a tricky line to walk.
Yeah, you know, the first song on your new record, Rains Come, has that no one ever told me it would be like this. And then you end... the record with that acapella this year, which is sort of I'm wishing everyone peace.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And it actually kind of made me laugh, and I couldn't tell if you were being tongue in cheek at times or you're just a very earnest, pleasant group of guys. You know, this sort of like almost like impossible dreams for people. Like I hope everyone's marriage is healthy.
Yes. Yes.
Right.
No, it was definitely, to me, it was a bit of a send up of holiday songs. Yeah. Of just the way we suddenly are like it's
an odd lane.
It's the most it's the most wonderful time of the year, and all of a sudden everybody's families are beautiful and yet also like trying to walk that line of kind of poking fun at that, but at the same time, there is an earnest sense in all of us.
Yeah.
We all hope that it's going to be okay. And so there's a bit of a lullaby, a bit of a, you know, a sense at the very last line of saying, there's no need to worry, there will be peace this year, that these are the songs we sing to our kids. These are the things we kind of tell ourselves when we are all getting anxious, and we're all anxious right now. So in that sense, it was kind of fun to sort of go over that line a little bit. You know, there's one verse where it's, you know, your cat is grateful for your friendship.
Yeah.
He is effusive with his praise. I mean, that's where it goes the furthest over
Your praise. For some reason, is there something about grace?
No, I think it's...
I thought it was effusive with its grace.
Oh.
I was like, wow, how is a cat effusive?
Very gracious.
What a gracious
effusively
cat.
Gracious. Yeah. Yeah.
Since you guys are very pleasant, kind... And as you said when you were talking about your band name, not offensive.
Yeah.
We do a creative exercise sometimes here on the show to get the creative brains really going.
Yeah.
And you're going to be playing a show in a bit. We have one more band member that has not weighed in yet. I need you to sit down. We're just going to go around one time with everyone.
Okay.
Introduce yourself.
I will say that... It's possible the podcast comes at the expense of some Vietnamese food. So.
It is really good. Right? Yeah. They're very quick. Yeah.
So I bring greetings and also wrap it up, boys.
tell the people who you are.
I'm Eric Brubaker. I play fiddle.
Nice. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to rapid fire, top of your head, don't try to think about it, something from your life that immediately hits you when I say penis envy.
Oh, man. Bad nights in the hotel.
Swimming pool.
Middle school locker room.
You poor suckers.
Touché. The KKK.
Sucks.
Hate, not heritage.
Mm. Oh, Church of Hate.
Pure evil.
Soft, kissy, missionary sex.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
A-okay with me.
My heritage.
All right.
A homoerotic volleyball montage.
Wow.
Steel Wheels band time.
All right, yeah. Yeah,
that's right. Just typical after show party. Yeah.
All right, last one. Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
She's a rock star.
I think we all agree on that.
Yeah. Where do you go from there?
Yeah.
Okay, so I know Vietnamese food waits. The whole point of the show is to have an acoustic song at some point.
Oh.
Now, can you sing that song a cappella, or is it too hard? Is it easy, easy enough to do?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the one you want to do?
That's fine.
Well, you can go down and get your instruments.
No, no.
That'd be the easiest.
Yeah.
This year there will be peace. This year there will be peace. This year there will be peace. There will be peace. There will be peace for my sister and my brother. Peace for my sister and my brother. Peace for my friends and for the others. There will be peace. All of your marriages are healthy. All of your children are strong. This is the year that you'll be wealthy. It won't be too long. Your cat is grateful for your friendship. He is effusive with his praise. He runs to you when you call him. These are the good days. My mom will know how much I love her. My mom will know how much I care. I always do forget to write her, but she is always there. When my Father's Day is over, when my Father's work is done, tell him I am proud to know him and to be called his son. This year you won't get any older. This year you won't turn gray. All of the songs we sing are bolder. All these words will pass away. There is no need to worry. There is no worry here. There is no need to worry. There will be peace this year.
There you have it, the wonderful Steel Wheels, everybody. You can go to thesteelwheels.com for their music and their tour dates. They'll be playing throughout the South coming up, January 9th in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, and January 10th in Raleigh, North Carolina. They'll be playing in their home state of Virginia in January and going down to Mississippi and Tennessee. Lots of really cool stuff from them. Their latest record is called Over the Trees, produced by the wonderful Sam Kassirer, who also produced our Dust Bowl Revival record, which comes out January 31st. Sorry to yell in all caps, but I'm really excited about this. You can pre-order our record, dustbowlrevival.com, listen to it on Spotify, and this Friday, our radio single comes out. It's called Dreaming. It's pretty banging, guys. I really hope you dance in your underwear like I will be doing January 10th. Listen to it wherever you listen to music. If you are brand new to our show this year, thank you for coming. I'm so glad you're here. This is actually episode 53, so there are 52 previous amazing episodes you can listen to, like when I talked to Steve Earle in his tour bus in Kentucky, or when I talked to Richard Thompson under the trees in Northern California, or maybe you missed the episode with the Warren Treaty, the rising folk soul stars, who basically brought me to tears in my own living room. Guys, there are so many episodes where you can learn about new artists touring the world today,
And you know what? If you go to our Instagram, Show on the Road Podcast, there is unique video footage that I often take of people playing the songs at the end of our episodes. So check that out. Big thanks again to our sponsor, Winter Wondergrass. Festival season starts earlier than you think, guys. February in Colorado, March in Lake Tahoe, and April in Vermont. Go check it out at winterwondergrass.com. You will not regret it. The Show on the Road is hosted by me, Zach Lupitan, and produced by the handsome Hawaiian Chris Jacobs with support from the Bluegrass Situation team. If you love The Show on the Road, please leave us a review or rating over at itunes.com/showontheroad. Tell your friends, and also be sure to check out BGS's ever-growing collection of podcasts up right now on thebluegrasssituation.com. The Show on the Road is a part of the BGS Podcast Network. This is Zach Lupitan. See you on the trail.
Hi, this is Chad Nicefield.
And this is Justin Press.
We're the host of Making Waves, the Shiprock podcast, a part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. We're inviting you to sail away with us on an epic journey in musical enlightenment. Every week, we bring you only the best artists in rock music and discuss everything from the cruise to the stage to the saga of being a professional recording artist. We'll have lots of special guests along the way, so tune in every week.
Your stateroom is available every Monday morning, so welcome aboard.